Welcome to JP Morgan Asset Management's Insights Now. My name is Jordan Jackson. I'm a global market strategist here at JP Morgan. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Brandon Hall, a research analyst on our Market Insights team. We're here to discuss all things Fed and the outlook for monetary policy and broader positioning in 2026. Welcome, Brandon.
Thank you, Jordan. I appreciate it. And I do have to say, I don't think we could have picked a better day to record this. It'll be coming out in some time now, but today, for reference, is January 30th, about 9:30 a.m. in the morning, and news just broke that Kevin Warsh will be the next nominee to replace Jerome Powell as Fed chair. So off the bat, Jordan, I want to ask you, what do you think of this pick, and how do you plan on framing this conversation with clients?
Well, we've all been patiently waiting for an announcement on who the next Fed chair nominee would be, and as you highlighted, Kevin Warsh is now that pick. What I would say is, putting my personal opinion to the side, he's not a new member to the Federal Reserve. So Kevin Warsh was a governor in 2006 to 2011. Historically, he's been somewhat hawkish around inflation, though more recently he's talked a bit more about some of the productivity gains that we could potentially see going forward, and that actually having a bit of a disinflationary pulse. So I think on balance, the market are sort of reading this as mildly dovish on policy rates, but still quite hawkish around the balance sheet and quantitative easing. So there's kind of how the markets are reading that. You're seeing this in bond prices where the front end is slightly lower, whereas long-term interest rates have moved up a little bit following the announcement. Now, in terms of a timeline, I think it's interesting. The shortest time from a President Fed chair announcement and their confirmation has been 82 days. Now, the Department of Justice is also reviewing the spending from the Federal Reserve on the new projects, renovation projects. And so there is a court case out that needs to get finalized before we're likely to get a confirmation. So it could be some time before Kevin Warsh actually comes on as a governor and then ultimately moving up as Fed chair. But I think taking a step back, we need to remember that there is a structure around the FOMC. There's a staggered nature to Fed governors. There's rotating bank presidents every year. And as a result of that, I do think just that structured nature of the committee itself limits one person dramatically changing the broader outlook for Fed policy. So that's sort of our kind of quick read of things more broadly around the recent announcement.
So Fed independence remaining intact despite all the fears of otherwise.
I think so, and that's probably why you're seeing a more muted reaction in the bond market. Again, we're not talking about big moves that we've seen across the yield curve, but again, I think markets appreciate the structure around the Federal Reserve.
Understood. Do you have any key takeaways from the meeting 2 days ago? I know we had their first meeting of the year. What are your thoughts there? I guess how do you view on their reaction function moving forward?
Yeah, so busy week for
yes,
the Fed.
Yes.
So their first meeting of the year, January, we didn't get any updated economic projections. On balance, it seems like the Fed sort of categorized labor markets as stabilizing. We did see a modest move lower in the unemployment rate in the month of December from 4.6% down to 4.4%. Currently, economic growth is tracking quite strong to round out the year, and we anticipate that fiscal stimulus is going to continue to be quite supportive and potentially buoy growth in the first half of 26 as well. So broadly speaking, you've got evidence that the economy, at least the hard data, is doing okay, humming along. Inflation is still appears to be a little bit of a concern, but on balance, it's not too far away from target or at roughly 3% on core PCE, slightly lower than that. Core PCE. And, I think the committee generally feels that they're close enough to neutral where they don't have to sort of overreact and continue to cut rates. It was interesting to see both Waller and Mirren, unsurprisingly, both dissented in favor of rate cuts. Also this morning, Governor Waller sent out a statement highlighting shortly after the Warsh announcement. So it kind of hit the tape wondering if Waller was going to be make some comments around the new appointment or the new nominee. But he sort of justified his reason for dissenting in favor of a cut, particularly citing some of the lack of growth in payroll growth and job demand for 2025, and that outside of tariff-related categories, inflation is pretty close to the Fed's targeted 2%. So he feels the committee should be looking through some of the inflation, tariff-related inflation, sort of focusing in on kind of outside of tariff-related price pressures. And I think he tried to make a decently compelling case as to why the Fed should continue cutting.
Yeah.
So you spent a lot of time on our econometric models. I know you work directly with David Kelly on a lot of those models as well. And so, thinking about the broader economy, inflation dynamics, how are you seeing things potentially evolving over the course of this year?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think during the press conference, Chair Powell on multiple occasions referenced these improved prospects for growth due to easier financial conditions and impending fiscal stimulus. Easier financial conditions, we've seen multiple measures of financial condition indices turn looser. Stocks are rallying. Policy rates are about 175 basis points below their peak. The dollar's weaker. And so we do expect this easier financial conditions kind of environment to persist into 2026. And again, that'll help support growth. But the largest impulse is, again, from the fiscal stimulus front. We have the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Tax provisions there should help boost tax refunds to consumers. Last year, the average tax refund, let's call it, was about $3,200. Mm. In 2026, we could think it could be about $4,000. So that's an extra $800 into consumers' pockets that they're going to spend out in the economy. And on the other hand, we also have the potential for these tariff rebate checks, particularly if we see growth start to slow, we see the fiscal stimulus from the OBBA start to fade a little bit towards the back half of the year, we could get further fiscal stimulus. And this does obviously have implications for both sides of the dual mandate, right? Inflation, I would say, in the back half of 2025 has been a little bit softer than we would have expected, but some of that is due to some statistical nuance from the government shutdown and some assumptions made to account for, I guess, a lack of data in some months. But we think it could rally to about 3.5%. Inflation could accelerate to 3.5% by June of 2026. Why I think that's interesting is because during the press conference, Chair Powell made a comment that they want to be confident that tariff pressures on inflation are temporary. And so I really think if we see inflation move higher through the middle of next year, we also have the potential for demand-driven inflation as well, that we may not get an answer to that question or get a little more clarity as to whether tariff impacts are temporary really until the back half of the year at least. Then there's also the labor market front, which definitely take Waller's point that the labor market is not at all strong, but we would say the labor market is tight, right? We've seen payroll growth slow on average over the past 3 months. It's actually been negative. It's been concentrated really in one sector. That's healthcare and social assistance. But at the same time that labor demand has slowed, we've also seen this slowdown in labor supply. Largely due to more restrictive immigration policies that we're seeing today. And this is expected to continue through 2026. The Census Bureau actually just released fresh net immigration estimates for the year ended in June 2026. They think net immigration will be just 321,000. And if we look at what net immigration was during the same period in 2024, it was 2.7 million.
Wow.
So a huge step down in net immigration. We have a slowdown in labor demand, which we're seeing, but again, that slowdown in labor supply should keep the unemployment rate pretty low, if not helping it move lower, really, through the back half of this year. And I think other measures of the labor market are also, some are sending mixed signals. Initial jobless claims, more of the hard data. Continuing jobless claims, still very low. But if you look at some consumer sentiment measures, those are obviously deteriorating. So kind of something we'll continue to monitor through the rest of this year. And I guess once we see this fiscal stimulus fade from the OBBBA, I guess really kind of back to normal towards the back half of 2026, back towards 2% growth, 2% inflation.
Yeah.
Looking for industry-leading insights on markets and the economy? Our Guide to the Markets illustrates a comprehensive array of market and economic histories, trends, and statistics through clear charts and graphs. For more information on the guide, visit our website at jpmorgan.com/GTM.
You hit on a lot of stuff there, a lot of interesting points. And kind of what I took away from that was, you know, this is a tight labor market, but not a strong labor market.
Yep.
We're seeing a bit of a drain from immigration. And, you know, you could argue on balance that given that big step down in net immigration, population growth overall for the U.S. economy could be flat, maybe slightly down for 2025, which is particularly interesting. And then you also made the strong case of fiscal stimulus being quite supportive for growth, that kind of additional $800 per the average American household. I mean, you know, we've seen this story play out before. You give an American consumer a dollar, we're going to find a way to spend two.
Yeah.
I joke, if you're me and my wife, you're going to find a way to spend three. So while that's good for growth, it also could potentially, to your point, lead to a little bit of stickiness and potentially moving higher in inflationary pressures in the first half.
Yep.
You know, putting all that together, what's your view around rate cuts?
Yeah.
You know, it seems the market anticipates the Fed to get down to three.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in Waller's statement this morning, he made some comments directly saying that we should be closer to neutral. The median estimate for neutral is 3%, not 3.5 to 3.75%, which is where the current Fed funds rate is at. So I guess what's your view on how many rate cuts we could see from the Fed potentially this year?
Yep. This is my opinion. I'm curious to hear yours as well. But I would say I expect maybe one rate cut this year. And maybe if I was to pick a side in which I think the risk skew to, that maybe the risk is down to no cuts. Because, look, we talked about fiscal stimulus. That could cause hiring to accelerate as well, could also push inflation higher. So when I look at the risks to the dual mandate, while they may be a little bit more in balance now, to me, the real risk is inflation running a little bit hotter and that tariff pass-through maybe not being as fast or as temporary as some might expect. So I'm gonna take one cut this year with risk skewed to no cuts. But I think there are some interesting scenarios that could play out that are worth recognizing, right? If we see the Supreme Court shut down the tariff ruling, and if the administration chooses to not reinstate them in a similar way after the fact, and if we see a divided government come November, let's say the Democrats take control of the House in November, that could preclude further fiscal stimulus. And in that environment, we could actually see growth and inflation maybe fall below 2% in late 2026. Mm. And in that environment, that we may see a Fed that's not as active in 2026, but maybe a little bit more active in easing policy in 2027. But what are your thoughts? I'm curious.
Yeah, I'd agree a lot with that, particularly around the scenarios. A number of things could play out, but specifically with regard to rate cuts, I'm in the 0-1 camp similarly, because, you know, I do think the balance of risk is upside risk to growth, upside risk to inflation. I mean, even if you don't get, if you do get a reversal of the IEEPA tariffs and those are ruled as unconstitutional, I feel like there's just a lot of demand that's potentially driving at least some firmness in inflation. I wouldn't rule out, you've got the World Cup happening in North America this year,
yeah.
A bunch of games across the United States.
Tickets.
We anticipate a pretty big pickup in tourism as well to come over and enjoy those games. And, you know, maybe the U.S. Kind of experience around the World Cup feels a little bit how Taylor Swift's tour in Europe did to help support growth in Europe last year. So, Let's maybe shift gears around kind of fixed income markets and yield curve. You know, I'll share some of my thoughts, you know, right out the gate. But when we look at the shape of the curve, I think markets are very much still pricing in a steepening in the curve. Now, we've seen some modest flattening so far to start the year, but there's still perhaps a longer-term trend of steepening. And it's interesting because this steepening feels a lot like a twist steepener,
mm-hmm.
right? And where you've got short rates that are, you know, kind of coming down a little bit. The longer end of the curve, however, appears to be pressured a little bit higher on a lot of things that we talked about, right? Stronger growth, you know, revising Fed rate cut expectations. We haven't seen any real de-anchoring of inflation expectations, but that potentially is a risk as well. And then, of course, you've got continued running of higher deficits and higher debt levels here in the U.S. Not just here in the U.S., but also places like Japan, Germany loosening up the purse strings. So as you see global long-term yields rise, I think that also puts some upward pressure on U.S. yields at the very, very long end. So, you know, as we think about broader duration positioning, if you kind of think of the yield curve as a level, and you've got one side of the level that's being pressured lower by rate cuts, and you've got the other side being pressured a little bit higher, again, this kind of twist steepening, the most stable point on that level is the fulcrum, like the pivot point, yeah. Right? And that's really the 2 to 3, 2 to 4 year part of the curve. And that really anchors our view around broader duration positioning, really being kind of around that 2 to 4 years. And you can express this in sort of a more core, high quality fashion where you've got some treasuries, some high quality investment grade bonds, higher quality securitized assets as well. That could probably get you to an income somewhere around 4.5% to 5% without taking a whole lot of duration risk, which seems quite appropriate. If you're looking for income, flexible manager that can maybe extend on the credit spectrum a little bit, go down a little bit in credit quality, play in extended sectors like emerging markets, like parts of high yield, that can give you some additional incremental yield. And now you're talking about still a roughly 2-3 year duration profile, but now an income closer to 5.5%. So that's kind of, you know, how we're thinking about sort of the fixed income from specifically a broader duration credit perspective. Would you agree sort of with that kind of positioning?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. As I think how we've discussed the story is really investing in fixed income for the income. If we see less active policy rate adjustments from the Federal Reserve, rates staying more or less range bound really through the next year or two, it's really leaning into the income aspect of fixed income, remembering that we're long-term investors. And as I've heard you say before, bonds are math. If you hold to maturity, you're getting the income offered by the security. So I don't think I could have said better myself.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. We covered quite a lot.
Yes.
Everything from growth to inflation to brand new Fed chair nominee, timeline around that, and the broader outlook for the economy and rates. What we didn't talk about is NFL season and yes. Super Bowl season. And, look, I laugh at a lot of my client conversations because I talk about how weak consumer sentiment has been. Mm-hmm. I'm a New York Giants fan, so my sentiment has been sour for quite some time, many, many years. And to see the Patriots in the Super Bowl again, you know, obviously it would be sacrilegious for me to root for them. So I guess I've got some table stakes for Seattle. But where what's your pick for the Super Bowl win this year?
Yeah, so I went to school in the Bronx, was not a very popular person there. Live in New York now, not a very popular person here, and that's because I am a Patriots fan.
Wow.
I know. So I'm looking for a Patriots win. Need to see the offense produce a little bit more than they have the past couple games, so we'll see. Definitely keep my fingers crossed for a Patriots win. So appreciate you asking. I hope you're disappointed and I'm not.
All right. Well, we can agree a lot around fixed income and the Fed, but we certainly won't agree on Super Bowl Sunday. This was great, Brandon. Really appreciate the time.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Jordan. And I want to thank you all for tuning in today for another episode of JP Morgan Asset Management's Insights Now. We hope to see you again soon and that you join us next time. Have a great day.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.